And the recording has restarted at 9:02 a.m. Dr. King, I'll do a roll call, and I invite each member, as I call your name, to introduce yourself and your position on the board as public or private member, or public or professional member. Dr. King.
I'm Kelly King, professional member, board chair.
Dr. Bustillo.
Karen Bustillo, professional member, board vice president.
Mr. Leone. And the recording has restarted at 9:02 a.m. Dr. King, I'll do a roll call, and I invite each member, as I call your name, to introduce yourself and your position on the board as public or private member, or public or professional member. Dr. King.
I'm Kelly King, professional member, board chair.
Dr. Bustillo.
Karen Bustillo, professional member, board vice president.
Mr. Leone.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, secretary.
Dr. Hike.
John Hike, professional member.
Mr. Greer.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Staff, my name is Judy Chepius, executive director. Ms. Cardoza.
My name is Veronica Cardoza, administrative services officer.
Ms. Crowley.
Monica Crowley, I am the licensing administrator.
Ms. Richardson.
Good morning, Mindy Richardson. I'm the board's investigator.
And Mr. Harris, our legal counsel.
Good morning. I am the board's legal advisor.
Thank you, everyone. Before we move forward, I do want to state on the record that I am familiar with Ms. Wartenberg. She was in one of the classes that I taught. However, there is no concern for bias. Ms. Wartenberg, please introduce yourself, and are you represented by counsel?
I'm not. I'm Janelle Wartenberg, PTA. I'm not represented by counsel.
Thank you. This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules has occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions: issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on the licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific CEUs, if continuing education units. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficient serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of the board's statutes or rules, the case may be dismissed. If, however, the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of the license or certificate, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. Judy, at this time, can we swear in the witnesses, please?
Please state your name for Ms. Richardson and Ms. Wartenberg. Raise your right hand, and I will read the oath, and then you will say your name and respond to it. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God. Ms. Richardson?
I do.
Ms. Wartenberg?
I do.
Thank you. Mindy, would you please give us an overview of this complaint?
Of course. This complaint, 2221, was filed by Ms. Wartenberg's employer at the time. The employer provided physical therapy services as a contracted provider to a skilled nursing facility in Sholo. Ms. Wartenberg at the time was a per diem employee. The employer alleged that Ms. Wartenberg created false documentation and billing for the date of service, April 2nd, 2022. The employer completed an internal investigation, supported their findings of falsified records, and terminated her employment. The board reviewed this case at their April 2023 meeting and voted to move this case to an informal hearing and instructed staff to pursue additional investigation. That additional investigation was included in your board review materials as Exhibit 5. The board adopted the following potential violations in this case. ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-2044-13, charging unreasonable or fraudulent fees for services performed or not performed. ARS 32-2044-14, making misleading, deceptive, untrue, or fraudulent representations in violation of this chapter or in the practice of the profession. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate records, and as it relates to R-424-303, G1, a physical therapist assistant who provides selected treatment intervention under general supervision, shall document in the record the name and license number of the supervising therapist. R-424-304-A.3.E, enable another physical therapist to assume the patient's care at any point in the course of therapeutic intervention. And R-424-304-A.6, for each date of service, there is an accurate record of the physical therapy services provided and billed. Ms. Wartenberg received a copy of the investigative report, but did not submit a supplemental written response. That's the end of my briefing.
Thank you, Mindy. Ms. Wartenberg, would you like to make an opening statement?
I guess we kind of went over this last time at the board meeting, but I don't believe that I did what they asked. I went and I saw the patients. I did it to help the facility, and you know, other than clocking out early, I did see those patients, and I didn't falsely document anything.
Thank you. Is the complainant on the call by chance?
No, I was informed that they would not be present.
Great. Thank you so much. Ms. Wartenberg, I'm assuming that you will be okay with answering questions from the board?
Yes.
Thank you. Board members? What questions do you have for Ms. Wartenberg? I'll start, Ms. Wartenberg. Who was your supervising therapist for those patients?
It was under my impression that I believe her name was Beth. She had stopped working for the company and she had went over to Summit the hospital. But she had agreed to stay on to help out for evals and such. And then I was later informed, well, since this, when they were trying to ask the company who was my actual supervisor, she said she was over, wasn't working weekends. But that was the only PT I even knew of working at the facility at the time.
So I just have a follow-up question to that then. Is it common for you to treat patients without having had a conversation with the supervising PT that day about the specific patients you're working with?
When working in that facility at the time, yes, unless we had a question, because we had their plan of care to go on. We didn't usually contact them unless we had questions, but she was always available by text, via text. I had her personal phone number.
Can you talk me through a little bit of one of the statements and then some of the documentation evidence of concurrently working with two patients, DK and MS? And you talked about it was common practice to work with concurrently with more than one patient at a time. However, the billing looked like they were billed for individual treatment. Can you talk me through why you would bill for individual treatment when you actually were working with two patients at the same time?
It was common in that facility, especially due to productivity requirements, that we kind of all worked together. If an OT was present, we'd bring them all into the gym. They would pretty much stay in there for hours. We would make coffee so that, you know, they would want to be there. Sometimes it helped us, you know, poor staff to come in and want to be there because they never wanted to get out of bed usually, especially if we were there early. you know, and we kind of just work on, we do activities together, OT included sometimes. You know, I just figured they were, that's just what we did. We billed for their time. They were in there probably three times longer than the actual time we billed for a lot of the times.
So for these, for this particular one on the, I think it was on one of the light gates type of machines or Duostep, did you, the note said that the OT was actually the one who put the patient on, but you billed for that. I'm confused how your billing, how that your billing would be things that you actually didn't do.
So I was right there. That patient was actually even done. I'm really just confused why this OT would say, I mean, that patient was done. She said, we need to get treatment for that. And I said, okay. She goes, well, I've been the one working with her. I would be willing to go get her again. I said, well, just tell her that we'll go in there together. I was finishing up a treatment across the hall. So as I was coming out of that treatment, I saw her across the way, bringing that patient, you know, asking her, hey, you know, would you mind just coming again to therapy? And so as she was pushing the wheelchair, I was walking behind the entire time. I was right there with the transfer, setting up the wheelchair, talking to the husband that was standing right there. And so I was in the room while that patient was doing the new step, and then the patient broke down because she had some anxiety going on. She kept apologizing that she was being a burden or so emotional. And then the OT was willing to transfer her back to her room. But I was there the entire time.
So it sounds like, though, like you had said, you were falling behind with the wheelchair. Is that skilled? Is that a skilled service that you would potentially bill for?
I didn't bill for that transfer. I billed for the new step activity and transferring her from that wheelchair.
Right, but she was on the new step with the OT, the CODA.
I'm sorry?
She was on the new step with the CODA, not you. Is that correct?
On the new step independently. The CODA helped me transfer her, which is very common in skilled nursing, to transfer together.
What skilled service did you provide for her while she was on the new step then?
I don't remember. I don't have the note in front of me, but it was for lower extremity and upper extremity activities and strengthening. If along the lines, that's usually what we bill for a new step.
Along those lines, Mrs. Wartenberg, you mentioned that this patient specifically had anxiety. Were there cognitive delays so that she might not be able to remember you?
No, she was very anxious and upset, and that's what the CODA has explained to me. And I said, well, if she's not willing to do it, we can't. She goes, well, I can go get her. And she offered to do that because I wasn't familiar with the patient. So she offered to go get her, offered to help me during it to calm her down.
And so then, if you weren't familiar with the patient, did you talk specifically to the PT about this patient before you started working with this patient?
No, because her goals were in the computer, you know, in the plan of care. It was pretty basic. The CODA offered to go get her. I'm just confused at why she wouldn't even say that this happened. But we do have a history. I was her director of rehab couple years prior. I really don't understand why she would act like she wasn't aware when that patient was done with the occupational therapy part and she offered to go get her for me.
And relative to the PT that you worked with, you were able to text with the PT. How often would you meet with the PT to talk about the different patients in the caseload?
That wasn't a common practice of PRN work. I worked in Wilcox down at the hospital at the time. I would see her when I'd come to work if she was working during the week and I was working PRN. But it was pretty standard to show up, pull up the patient's plan of care, and if there was any questions, we would contact the PT. They never held weekly meetings. I've heard of that happening when you're full-time staff, but not with PRN.
Ms. Wartenberg, what responsibility do you hold in ensuring that you have spoken to the PT each day before you treat?
I'm not sure that I understand your question.
You've mentioned a few times that you thought it was a particular PT that you're supervising, but it wasn't common practice to talk to them, that they would contact you every now and then. But what is your role in making sure that you are the one as the PTA speaking to the supervising PT each day prior to treating patients?
Well, now I work in an outpatient and the PT's there with me all the time. Now that I look back, I wasn't aware that that was something that we were supposed to do. They would just ask us to work. I've traveled all over the state. It was just something they really needed. And this particular weekend, I've been working for 3 companies. I told them I no longer wanted to work with that company. And that's when they offered me a $500 stipend, which they never paid because after this weekend, they turned me in, which I didn't even know about until I was contacted by the board. I didn't know that I wasn't working for that company anymore because I had already told them that I was not willing to, you know, work for them anymore. I needed to spend time with my family. Now that I'm aware of it, I just did not know that was a requirement to actually speak with a PT before I worked with these patients.
And you've been a PTA for how long?
10 years.
10 years.
That was my facility. I worked for skilled nursing for 7 years. It's changed over the years, and now I work as an outpatient because of the stresses, honestly. Okay. And I love my job now.
I just have one other question for you regarding the timestamp of the documentation. So you would build for 6 hours and 10 minutes, billing for 12 patients. You said you clocked out early around 10 a.m., but all the documentation was timestamped at 12:33. Can you just walk us through how you documented at 12:33 when you left around 10?
It told me to bill for the time. They said that I gave you 6 hours of patience or whatever that added up to, and to bill for it. And so I billed for it.
Thank you.
Ms. Wartenberg, I guess I don't understand that last a little bit. Did you provide 6 hours worth of treatment?
Not from the clock at time. I clocked out early. I guess that's where this is all stemming from. I saw all those patients. I did. And I clocked out early.
And the reason you billed for it is because they told you to bill for it. Is that, do I understand your testimony?
They said that I would get paid for 6 hours, yes.
Did they condition you getting paid for 6 hours on you submitting billing for 6 hours?
They told me I'd get 6 hours, so that's what I billed for, and that's how I had to clock it in the system. You can't just put in 6 hours. You have to put it according to the clocking.
Did that make you uncomfortable at all, or was that just normally how that company did business?
That's just normally how they did it. There was no other way to clock it. If there was, I would have put it on there.
Prior to this time on April 2nd, 2022, had you billed for time that you didn't work? Is this the first time where had they told you to bill for time that you didn't work so you could get paid previously?
No, because I was, this particular day, I told them I had things I had to do. I had plans to take runabouts. And I said, well, just clock your time. Make sure you come see the patients. And so that's what I did.
When you say they, who's the person that provided this instruction to you?
Dakota, who actually, for some reason, can't recall that I saw that patient. She was acting DOR at the time. I guess she's the one who scheduled me. She's the one I told that I had to leave. And she said, just go ahead. I'll take this patient back. But the person who had offered the $500 stipend, I believe her name was Mary. She was acting. I don't remember her title, but she's the one who would offer the stipends, things like that.
Thank you.
All right, go ahead.
So I have a few questions. So just to clarify, you got to the facility at 6 a.m., is that correct?
If that's what I clocked, yes.
Just, okay. Left at 10 a.m., so you were there for 4 hours, but then billed for 6 hours of patients. You're saying that this is the director of rehab who told you, regardless of how long you were in the facility, bill for 6 hours of patients.
Yeah, they told me to clock for what they told me I would get, 6 hours that day.
And that didn't strike you as odd?
To be paid for 6 hours?
To bill for 6 hours of treatment that you weren't there for 6 hours.
No, they told me I would get paid for 6 hours. I saw all those patients for the time that I did. I believe on last call, we've always billed while they're resting. I'd have another patient work, and I was told that that's not proper either, which, I mean, if you're taking, you know, rest, evaluating their breathing, if they're fatigued, I was under the impression we can bill for that. I mean, they were in there for however time that I billed or I was in their room.
Okay. As far as what you're doing now, so, I mean, we've talked a little bit about the supervision aspect of things, talking with a supervising therapist before you start your treatment with anybody. How have you changed that in the facility that you're in now? I understand that the PT's there with you all day, but are you actually sitting down with them, having conversations about each patient before you start treating?
No. I mean, I guess before, like if it's a new patient, we go over it or they'll come to me and say, hey, this is what I saw, or they'll do it actually at the time of their eval. They'll come over and say, hey, this was a new patient. This is, what's going on with them. This is what we'll be working on. So I guess it's not really a formal sit down, but that's just kind of how it works. If they're a new patient, yes, we sit, or they come and talk to me and say, this is what we're going to be doing. And then I just go off the plan of care and then basic protocols for ortho shoulder patients. And then if I have questions, I text them or I text, even if sometimes the PT's in my building and the PT that evaluated that patient's in the other building, I'll contact them specifically rather than the PT that didn't evaluate them.
Okay. Those are the only questions I had.
Ms. Wartenberg, what's your understanding of the PTA's responsibility in documenting who the supervising PT is for each patient each day?
Now I've just put it in there all the time. In the skilled nursing, I was doing it all the time, and then they told me I didn't need to do that, which was confusing to me, but they said that it would be on the paper trail somehow, like it was on the eval or the original plan of care. I don't remember at the time, but I questioned that then. But like I said, I used to put it every day, all the time. I was very adamant about that. And then they said, well, you don't need to be putting that in all the time. I was like, okay. And so, but now at this outpatient, I put it on every note. And I make sure of it too, with supervision issues. Just because I was asked last time about, why I didn't put it in there. And, you know, I just was like, well, that makes sense. They need to see that on every note. So I'm probably annoying to my employer now, but every time they go on vacation, I'll say, I need to know who my supervising PT is, please. And I'll get their number.
Are there any additional questions for Ms. Wartenberg?
So, Ms. Wartenberg, one of the first things you said in your opening statement is, other than clocking out early, you don't think you did anything wrong. And I'm trying to understand kind of what your perspective is on the clocking out issue. Are you trying to tell us that you clocked out early and still treated these patients?
Well, I guess I didn't mean that I didn't do anything wrong. I was meaning that I saw these patients, and a lot of those original, or what I was told, a lot of the reason that started this was that I believe they had said that I don't remember the wording, but it was along the lines of that I didn't see these patients and I falsely documented it on them, which I did not do. I've never been a patient that I didn't see.
So I guess let me ask you this then. So when you were speaking with Mr. Leone, he walked you through a date where you arrived at 6 and left at 10. Do you remember that conversation?
I'm sorry, who walked me through?
Mr. Leone. It was two questioners ago.
Yes.
He walked you through a date where you arrived at 6 a.m.
Uh-huh.
And then you clocked out at 10 a.m. Do you remember that?
It was around there, yes.
And on that day, we see that you billed for 6 hours of physical therapy. I guess what I'm trying to understand is how, do you have an explanation for how you provided 6 hours of physical therapy in 4 hours?
They each got treatment. They were in that gym for longer than that, and they each got that amount of therapy.
So were you working after 10 a.m. then? Did you clock out and continue to work?
No, I don't remember the exact time that I clocked out, but I did clock out early. I saw those patients, so I guess if I was supposed to bill them concurrently, but in my eyes, when they're resting and I'm working with someone else or they're in there longer than that, they at least got that treatment that I billed for, which was standard and what I was told to do in that facility at the time, especially to keep up with productivity standards, which I believe at that time were 98%. But in my eyes, I was okay with billing for that time because they were in there 3 times as much of that time, a lot of the times I was in that facility.
Okay, so am I understanding correctly then that what you're saying is that they were there for that amount of time, even if you had clocked out and left, that your understanding is that the patients were still there? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, they got that amount of therapy in that gym. I guess I'm not understanding what you're saying. They were seen. I left early.
Okay. Well, and that's what I'm trying to understand. If you billed for 6 hours of work, mm-hmm. and you were there for 4 hours, and what I'm trying to understand is where did the extra 2 hours come from if you weren't there, if you left early?
Because they told me they would pay me for 6 hours.
Okay.
It sounds like what you're saying is that you were treating multiple patients concurrently. Is that basically what you're saying?
They were all in the gym at the same time, so.
So instead of billing them with the group code, because they were all in group therapy at that point, you were billing them with regular CPT codes. Therax, Neuro, Therac, whatever the case might be, when you probably should not have been billing them that way.
If that's how it looked at, yes. I mean, some of the exercises they were doing, you know, we'd do kicks together, but with physical therapy in that setting, to bill for gait, a lot of times they needed one-on-one care, so I was fine with billing them individually. And so while they would rest, I would go and walk with the other if that's what I was doing, or if they needed individual treat. But probably some of it I should have been billing concurrently. But they always don't use that code.
That makes a little bit more sense to me. That it sounds like you were treating most of your patients concurrently. That's how you're getting the 6 hours.
Yeah.
Okay.
What are you trying to get?
Any other questions for Ms. Wartenberg? Okay, Ms. Wartenberg, would you like to make a closing statement?
I mean, I can see how this is just a big mess, but I honestly love my career and I just would like to be able to continue to do it.
Thank you. Ms. Wartenberg, at this time, the board is going to go into deliberations. So we're going to be talking amongst ourselves. Just ask that you not interrupt us and let us kind of work through the evidence and your testimony and come up with some conclusions. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. So we have several allegations that are part of this case and just want to talk through them to see what your thoughts are about any of them or all of them being substantiated. The first one is engaging in substandard care by a PTA, ARS 32-2044-5.
Well, let me ask the board this question as someone who's not a physical therapist or a PTA. I understand what happened now. Is there any legitimate reason where someone should be billing patients concurrently?
Are you asking, Josh, if a concurrent billing code is actually a legit thing?
Well, I understand that, you know, based on the testimony, that there may be a code that you could use for concurrent billing, and I'm assuming mm-hmm. that wasn't used in this case.
Right. Yeah.
But if the correct code was used, is it appropriate to treat patients concurrently in the manner that the licensee or the certificate holder justified?
In my experience, it has to be justified. It can't be based on the convenience of the schedule, that there has to truly be a benefit of this patient, of the patients concurrently working together as a group versus I only have 45 minutes and I need to see three patients, so I'm just going to throw them all in the group and work on with them together. There has to be justification. It's reimbursed at a lower rate as well. I think that that's important to know. So patients are charged differently for individual versus concurrent or group. And I think that that's unfortunately sticky sometimes. And why they're not charged the correct rate, because the reimbursement is different, but there has to be a justification. It can't be just purely out of convenience.
Yeah, and the justification is not, I only have 4 hours to see these 6 hours worth of patients, I'm going to do them together.
Correct.
That's what I assumed it was. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding.
Is it okay if I add something?
Yes.
Mr. Gruss' question. The other thing to keep in mind, too, is that if you see two patients, say from 9 to 9:30, you're working with one patient while the other patient is resting. You can't bill for that rest time. So mm-hmm. you can't bill two 30-minute treatments when you're going back and forth between patients. You really are only allowed to bill for direct skilled intervention. And if the patient requires excessive rest breaks because of endurance, fatigue, whatever, then that should be documented.
Agree.
And that's where the use of the group code actually comes into play. Because it's an untimed code, you can't bill multiple units of it. So that was kind of my point that I brought up of it probably was more appropriate to use a group code as opposed to traditional codes that PTs and PTAs use.
Yeah, it's just one unit reimbursed at a lower rate.
I think in reviewing the allegations, all of them are substantiated.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I think I tend to understand, at least on a superficial level, the motivation behind doing this. You know, giving the certificate holder the benefit of the doubt, if she told them, hey, I'm only going to be here for this amount of time, they told her to see the patients anyway, that puts her in a tough, tough position. We'd like to think she'd say, nope, that's not ethical. I'm not going to do that. And if you make me do it, I'm going to resign my position. But that didn't happen here. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, in reviewing all of the allegations, I think it's substantiated. I think the licensee shows a incredible lack of education on some of the basic standards of the profession that I think need to be corrected for the safety of the public and to help her develop professionally. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mr. Greer, that, you know, she's been practicing for 10 years and to not know that she's supposed to speak to the supervising PT and document and some of the billing and coding things. I appreciate that she loves her profession, wants to stay in her profession. I think her lack of education on truly practicing appropriately as a PTA is concerning. And so I'd like to help her with that. Giovanni, what are your thoughts?
I'm on the same page as you guys. I see a complete lack of understanding of our Practice Act and what it is that we're supposed to be doing as PTAs and communicating with our supervising therapist. You know, my hope was that I was going to hear that has changed moving into this new setting, and it sounds like that still hasn't changed. So I think there needs to be some sort of education that goes out here to help her get on track with that. You know, I wouldn't be opposed to her taking the law exam, you know, making sure that she has an understanding of all the rules that are within our Practice Act, various continuing education on billing and coding, documentation, ethics. I mean, I think that there's a lot that can go into this.
And I have a question for you about, and just for the board, you know, would monitoring be something to think about after having gone through these things, like how have, if we go this direction, right, with CEUs and jurisprudence and whatnot, how does she then implement that into her current practice? Just a thought.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to monitoring being a part of this at all, especially if it seems like there's a fear of saying no, you know, so having somebody monitor her practice and assist her with, no, this is not something that you can be doing, you know, this is how you should approach the situation. I think that could be something that helps her quite a bit.
Go ahead, Mr. Dr. Hake.
I'll just say that I agree that the education piece is the primary thing that I think she needs. I also believe that most therapists and or PTAs trust the system that they work in and trust that their boss is telling them the right information or their company is telling them the right information, and that they rely on that quite a bit. That doesn't excuse that she has a certificate or a physical therapist has a license that they have to practice at the level that they need to practice at ethically. Mm-hmm. I think that in this case is the lesson that she needs to learn from this action.
And I think to dovetail on what John was just saying, I feel like people that are doing the PRN work, the places that hire PRN therapists, I feel like tend to get lax. They just want somebody to come in and cover the caseload so that their people can continue to be seen. And then again, to again say, it is of the utmost importance that the people who choose to do PRN work are the ones that are truly guarding their license, understand the Practice Act the way that it should be done. Because I really do feel that so many people that go into these situations are really being asked to bend many rules. And I think it happens, unfortunately, too frequently. I don't think it excuses anything in this situation. I do feel that all of the allegations are substantiated, and I like the direction that we're looking at in terms of providing some remediation.
Great. It makes me think of travelers as well, you know, in that same situation, right, particularly new grad travelers that just really can be vulnerable. So just got to know your Practice Act. If you want to keep that certificate or license, it's on you to own it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, with that, I'd like to make a motion that for a disciplinary board order. I would say 6 months probation.
Dr. King, may I assist you?
Yes.
We probably need to find findings of facts and
conclusions. Oh, you're right.
Before we get there.
Thanks, Josh. I was on the wrong page. Okay. I'd like to make a motion to adopt the findings and facts and conclusions of law outlined in the investigative report, all of them.
Second.
I propose an amendment.
Okay, sure.
I believe the testimony establishes that she arrived at 6 a.m. In the proposed findings of fact, there were some suggestions that she didn't arrive until 8 or 8:30. And so to the extent that the findings of fact state that she was arrived at 8 or 8:30, now, I'd like to give her the benefit of the doubt that she arrived at 6 a.m. I haven't seen really any evidence that she didn't. I don't think it matters to the discussion. And so I would just find that she arrived at 6 a.m. instead of 8 or 8:30 as stated in the investigative report.
Okay. So adopting all the findings of facts with the amendment that she arrived at 6 a.m. versus the fact identified in the investigative report that it was at 8 a.m.
Yes, I second that motion.
Okay, great. Is there any discussion about findings of fact and amendment and conclusions of law? Okay. If none, then Judy, would you please call the vote?
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the findings of fact and conclusions of law as outlined in the investigative report with the amendment that she arrived at a time, with the amendment that the investigative report indicates that she arrived at a time other than 6 a.m. to work on the day in question. Dr. King?
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you. All right, then I'd like to make a motion that we, for a disciplinary board order, for 6 months of probation, 9 hours of continuing education, including documentation, billing, and supervision, 3 hours of ethics. All CEUs can be taken online. I'd like to include in that motion that she retake the jurisprudence exam. and include monitoring of her practice for a time frame of, would you say 3 months? 3 months? Okay. Are there any thoughts about that motion?
Are you going to be able to get it all done in 6 months? Or?
Oh, good point.
I mean, should we give her a year?
Yes. Let's say 12 months of probation.
And then with availability of early termination?
Yes.
Dr. King, I'm sorry. I lost my place in my notes. Can you remind me what the hours were? You said documentation, ethics, and billing?
Yes. So I said 9 hours of documentation, billing, and supervision. 3 hours of ethics. Retake the jurisprudence exam. 3 months of monitoring her documentation and practice. CEUs can be taken online, and eligibility for early termination if all the requirements are met. 12 months of probation.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. With regard to monitoring, you know, it becomes difficult with the PTA. The expense to the PTA, I really have a trouble with. I understand why we want to see her improve, but I just can't support monitoring in this case because I just think it makes it economically unfeasible for the certificate holder. You know, this isn't someone who owns her own practice. This is going to just, I think, be a problem without really giving the public much additional protection. And so if you remove the monitoring, I'll support your motion. But if you don't, I'm going to vote against it.
Would you be willing to modify, consider modifying the monitor? I would just like to have someone eyes on her documentation, at least after she's completed all these things, at least 5 charts.
What does that look like? Just a chart review? Someone performs a chart review after and provides a report. I could probably get behind that.
Karen, what was your question?
That was my thought, is if we could have staff do a chart review.
Judy and Mindy, is that feasible?
Mindy?
That's a tough question because I think historically the board has gone to external monitoring for a reason.
Yeah.
My preference would be, given the caseload we have in front of us for other cases that need to be adjudicated, that this really needs to be done externally.
Mm-hmm. And therein lies the expense. I get it.
I wonder if, so this is going to be a disciplinary order. Her current employer is obviously going to be made aware of this. They're going to find out about this. What are the members of the board's feelings about kind of relying on that to ensure that this monitoring happened? I would expect and hope that if her employer gets notice of this, that they're going to be more cautious about her charting and her care and her billing. I would hope that they are concerned about these things and that they are also watching them. There's a part of me that is a little cynical about that, because I know we as a board have repeatedly been concerned about these companies and the fact that they seem to be, as appears to be the case here, utilizing these therapists and these therapy assistants to try to do things that they shouldn't be doing. But I think in this case, you know, we are doing what we can do. We're providing that disciplinary order. I see that as kind of a shot over the bow. I agree with Mr. Greer. I think this is already going to be really difficult for the respondent, and I would hate to see her be financially unable to meet the board's requirements. I wonder what the board feels about just kind of relying on the deterring ability of the disciplinary order itself rather than a request for monitoring.
My thought, I agree with you. I can definitely, I'm torn as well. I mean, according to Ms. Wartenberg, her employer is the reason she's here. That it was their practice and their requirements of her that, you know, made her, that facilitated her in being now in front of the board. So I don't know that I trust any employer to oversee and make sure she's doing her thing. Maybe the supervising PT. I don't know. I don't know if it's feasible to request, and Mr. Harris, maybe you can let us know this, if it's feasible to request that she voluntarily submit a couple of charts. I don't know how it goes. She's been practicing for 10 years. It doesn't sound like it's new. It's a new thing. We're asking her to do a lot of education. I just want to make sure it's implemented. But, you know, again, I guess, long story short, if it's not, we potentially will see her again.
She is in a new practice setting, and it's very different than the one that she was previously in. And so she did make a statement that she is, you know, documenting who her supervisor is at each date of service. So there seems to be some initial change. How do we get her to talk to the supervisor? You know, hopefully she's listening well to this discussion, and that really is part of good clinical practice. And so, but I absolutely agree with Mr. Greer on the cost factor, and that I really don't want it to be prohibitive for her.
Yeah.
Well, and Dr. King, members of the board, not speaking either in favor or against. Sometimes just going through this exercise is the greatest education that a professional, you know, can receive. And as Dr. Bastille said, you know, Ms. Wittenberg's been listening to this discussion, and this may be the most valuable continuing education that she'll ever take.
Mm-hmm. So at this time, I'll amend the motion and remove the monitoring. I think, Mr. Greer, were you the one that seconded the motion?
We did.
Okay. Are you okay with that amendment?
Yes.
Okay. So Judy will remove the monitoring as part of the disciplinary action. Okay. Everything else stays the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, then I'm in favor of returning it to a 6-month. I'd like to get this done and over with.
Okay, so then I amend the motion to 6 months of probation, 9 hours of CEUs for documentation, billing, supervision, 3 hours of ethics, retaking the jurisprudence, all CEUs online, and is eligible for early termination.
Do we need to throw in there that it's not eligible for the renewal?
None of the CEUs taken as part of this board action are eligible for certificate renewal. Mr. Greer, do you approve this?
Yes.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Okay, then Judy, can you call the vote, please?
It's been moved and seconded to issue a board order to Ms. Wartenberg to include the following. Probation for 6 months with early termination possible with successful completion of all of the terms. The continuing education shall be completed in 6 months. Courses must be pre-approved. may be completed online and do not count towards renewal requirements. The continuing education shall be completed in the areas of documentation, billing, and supervision for a minimum of 9 hours, ethics for a minimum of 3 hours. Ms. Wartenberg must also successfully pass the AZ Law jurisprudence exam. Dr. King.
Yes.
Dr. Bastillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
The motion passes.